But Night Train.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Aboard the Night Train. My name is Frank George, and I am your host. Today happens to be Saturday, 21st, 2018, April, believe it or not. And today we managed to catch up with Mr. Ryan Bundy, who is running for governor of Nevada. This isn't just any Bundy. This is Ryan Bundy, the fellow who was the son of Clive and Bundy, rancher in Bunkerville, Nevada, who had such grave issues with the federal government. Now, all of them are free. Thank God for that and for their wise efforts to procure their freedoms in light of a federal government that has now become oppressive and, in my opinion, does not follow the Constitution at all. In this interview, you will hear Mr. Ryan Bundy express his opinions on a number of topics. Also, you will meet his manager, Denise Mirza, who is a very interesting lady, and a caller by the name of Joe Sanchez, who is absolutely fantastic. Sit back, enjoy the interview, and prosper from the intellectual wealth offered here. Here we go. The name Bundy, particularly Clive and Bundy, is very well known everywhere in the United States. In 2014, that family, consisting of Ryan and Ammon, his brothers, his father, and many others, faced off with the BLM over issues pertaining to land and the government. Now, in 2018, Ryan Bundy, after having gone through much, is running for governor of Nevada. Ryan Bundy, welcome to All Aboard the Night Train. How are you, sir?
Well, good. Thank you for having me, Frank. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, sir. I have followed everything that has happened to the Bundy family, and I have been supportive in many, many ways. And it is for me a thrill that someone like yourself, who has gone through so much, particularly in the state of Nevada itself, has stepped forward to address the issues that afflict not just Nevadans, but everybody across the United States, because I understand that you're a man who has studied the Constitution, believe in the Constitution, and affirm the thoughts and laws that have been put in there for the well-being of the American people. Ryan, I want to ask you, when did you decide that you wanted to run for governor of Nevada?
Would have just been just a few days prior to the sign-up time when I finally made that decision. So that was only about a month ago, month and a half ago.
Okay. Are you running as an independent, a Republican, a Democrat? What are you running as?
I'm running completely independent because I believe in standing up for correct principles rather than party politics. And so that's one of my mottos here is principles over politics.
Okay. I very much agree with you. I have tremendous issues with the Republican Party, and I am a registered Republican because I wanted to vote for Donald Trump for president of the United States, but I consider the Republican Party to be utterly corrupt. I consider the Democratic Party to be not just utterly corrupt, but now a Marxist entity. This leaves people the choice of running as an independent, which is a difficult and a hard one, but it's at least it's there. I want our listeners to be able to direct themselves to a website that you might have where campaign contributions may be made if possible. Do you have such?
Yes, we do. www.electbattlebornbundy.com, they can get to our donation page anytime. Our Facebook page is Ryan Bundy for Governor, and I hope that they'll check out our information. And of course, your call-in number is there as well right now.
Okay, and very
just
good.
Just for introduction, that is Denise Mraz, who is a campaign manager here for Ryan Bundy for Governor campaign.
Yeah, I thought your voice had shifted for a little bit, but I know that that's Denise's voice. But you're thoroughly masculine. We know that. Okay, so Ryan, you decided you were run for governor of Nevada. What is your platform, sir?
Well, first and foremost, I want to make sure that it's known and practiced that Nevada is a sovereign state, one of the 50 states of the Union. We are not a territory. We are not subject to territorial law or Congress making rules and regulations over us under Article 4, which is territorial law. We are a state. And it will, and as governor, I will make certain that Nevada is a recognized and acts as a state of the Union.
Okay, and I suspect that a lot of this has got to do with the disagreements you folks had with the federal government over the use of land, right?
Yeah, a lot of it stems from that, or a lot of my education, I should say, stems from that. Anyway, because we have experienced many atrocities from unlawful acts of the federal government upon us because we're not being treated as a state.
And Ryan, you and I were discussing prior before this actual interview the fact that constitutionally all that Washington has, all that the federal government has, is those 10 square miles that are known as Washington, D.C., I believe, and also access to forts and other things. Constitutionally, that's all that it has. It has no business grabbing pieces of Wyoming, which it owns great parts. Nevada, I think they lay claim to more than 50% or 50%, or is it less? You probably know.
Well, you know... Well, in Nevada, they're claiming as much as 90%.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, even the United States, when we say United States, the definition of United States, even within the United States Code, only includes the District of Columbia, the territories, and the insular possessions. Now, insular possessions are those federal enclaves that Congress has properly purchased through Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. That is the definition of the United States when we're talking about the entity. And that's not a definition that I've made up. That comes directly out of the United States Code.
All right, and I am very much aware of what you're talking about. Look, when we look at abuses, we know what happened with you folks out there in Bunkerville and the federal government. In Wyoming, the state that I claim as home, we had Hillary Clinton show up and give 20% of the nation's uranium to the Soviets. I feel that they have no legal right whatsoever to have done what they did. And yet we see these abuses going on and on and on. And yet it is very clearly defined in the Constitution what property, in terms of land, the government has been given. And yet most of our elected representatives, whether they be senators, whether they be members of the House, on down to the government itself and people that occupy the governor's house, even in Nevada, are clueless as to what this is. I'm glad that you understand what this is. What other aspects are there to your platform?
Well, I'm also very much... for judicial reform. First of all, both when we're talking about federal courts and bringing charges against men on a federal level and also upon a state level. Because when we look at the authorities that we the people give to the federal government, of course, we in Article 1, we outline, you know, what authorities we give to Congress. Article 2, we outline what authorities we give to a president. In Article 3, we outline what authorities we give to the judiciary. Now, if you look at Article 3 of the Constitution, Section 2 lays out the various jurisdictions that the federal court has. There's only six jurisdictions they have, and absolutely none of them are criminal jurisdictions. In fact, the last paragraph in Section 2 states that the trial of all crimes shall be held in the state, and that state is capitalized. Criminal jurisdiction belongs to the state, not to the federal government, not to the federal courts. The jurisdictions that the federal courts have are all civil jurisdictions. except in the case of impeachment. And so what's going on here with the federal government holding court upon criminal matters? That is inappropriate. And so that's going to have to stop, because this is, again, the state of Nevada, a sovereign state. It is not a District of Nevada. We are not a subdivision of the District of Columbia, which is what they're claiming, calling this the District of Nevada. In the federal court system. Furthermore, in the state court system, I also see a lot of atrocities where men are being accused and of crimes that are not crimes. And many men are being prosecuted unjustly, fined, fined, imprisoned unjustly. And this has to stop.
And I know
so
that
judicial reform is a big thing for me.
And I know that you know this subject matter very well. You have just recently done your time with the courts, so to speak, and we didn't know what was going to happen with you, really. Everything looked like doom and gloom, and then things took a turn. But I got to tell you, I have no faith in the courts. I have no faith in the federal government. I have no reason to whatsoever. So this is clearly a very important thing, and I'm glad that you have this as part of your platform, because we never know when we're going to be accused of something, even if we've done nothing wrong. So this is indeed very important. Ryan, I know you're very much into the Constitution, and people do talk about changing the Constitution with an Article 5 convention. I believe that your campaign manager, Denise Mercer, knows quite a bit about this. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I'll put my two cents in and let her speak about that a little bit more. But,
yes.
You know, the convention, if we open up a Article 5 convention, what we're doing is opening up an opportunity to completely change the entire Constitution.
Yes.
I want to give an example of that. Our founding fathers, the several states, which were independent, sovereign states, separate and individual, they joined together under the Confederation, in a confederation under the Articles of Confederation. Now, there were some parameters of that article, those articles, that were insufficient. And so they opened up a convention to address those insufficiencies. And instead of addressing just the insufficiencies, they completely scrapped the entire Articles of Confederation and rewrote an entire new document that we now know as the Constitution for the United States. Now, we praise this document and understand that it's a good document, but my point is that that same thing could happen. Instead of, if we opened up an Article 5 convention now, instead of just fixing or adding to or amending slightly what we have, they could completely scrap the Constitution and rewrite something else. Now, the problem with that is with so many progressives, so much communism, so much socialism that is abounding in our governmental society right now, I'd be scared to death what would come out. We wouldn't have any rights. We'd lose the right to the Second Amendment. We'd lose so many rights, I'm afraid of. There's no way I would want a Article 5 convention right now.
Oh, I'm with you. And we're going to bring Denise on in just a second. But before we do, I want to mention, to give an example, for example, changing constitutions, South Africa right now. Very briefly, I want to mention that South Africa was a country that was founded by whites. Then because of pressure from the world community, if you want to call it that, they included blacks in their society entirely. They ended what was called apartheid. The blacks, they were much larger in number. They were also communists, and they put together a bunch of anti-white laws. Whites are pretty much out of the country that they founded. But in addition to this, in August of this year, they're going to be amending their constitution for the expropriation of property without compensation. One has to understand that these are Marxists. They happen to be black. The whites cannot vote their way out of this, because they are now 8% of the population. And now they are set up so that the government can take all the farms, everything that they have, even down to an ashtray, without paying them a dime. They simply show up and do it. In the country that I was born in, Cuba, one of my relatives reported that the liquor business that they owned there before Fidel Castro took over and worked hard at for many, many a year, when the communist revolution took over that country, he received a visit from government officials, and they asked, who owns this establishment? And he said, I do. And they said to him, well, this business now belongs to the people and the people's government. You are to be an employee. It's that simple. It's that easy. That could happen here. Let's bring on Denise Mirza. She is the campaign manager for the Bundy campaign. Denise, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having us. And, you know, in the interest of time, because I know we have a short period of time, I'm just going to point to a fantastic article on throwing your rights into the swamp with a convention of states. And the JanePublicProject.org, I believe it's a JPP25, anyone can go there and see the evidence. Here's what's happening with convention of states. It was sold to people like me, patriots, fed up with a corrupt government. On the left, it was sold to them as an ability to insulate themselves from what they believe is corruption. And when we looked at the five names of convention of states, so you have it as Article 5 convention, they call it an amendment convention, they call it convention of states, COS, and CONCON. It has five names. That should have been our first clue. But some of us, you know, were patriotic, and we decided that we wanted to continue. It wasn't until probably 18 months ago where I saw my first crack in the glass and realized what Convention of States really was. So I started doing some digging. I found out that it's almost completely backed by George Soros money. They already have a progressive constitution prepared, ready to be signed. They have convinced patriots as well as the left, you know, I'll call anti-constitutionalists, that they're all in the right and that they're all going to get what they want. So they have basically two streams of information going to these two groups. And some of us have started to get a clue, because what happened within the Convention of States community was a few people who were getting wind of this started asking hard questions of people close to Mark Meckler. And we were given information, actual texts, that were then sent to the John Birch Society that prove that the Convention of States clearly says that their intention is to change the Second Amendment, that their intention is to nullify our rights to nullification. So while we need to get this message out, it's not getting out quickly enough. And the Convention of States is one of those things that was sold to us as a fantastic program, but honestly, it's not. And if any listeners are out there that know about it, they can read more at JanePublicProject.org, where I got some of my information, but clearly all the evidence is there.
Wow, I want to thank you for that. And we do have somebody listening there, a 325 area code. If you want to comment, please hit *61. Again, *61, and you will be able to speak with Ryan or Denise or myself. So if you desire to speak with any of them, press *61, and that will put you in queue. And I want to thank you for listening. Denise, this is fantastic information. They have that progressive constitution on there, do they?
So it's being held close to the vest, as you can imagine, but the people kind of at the top, and I'll say that there's one person in particular that was, like myself, a convinced patriot, the Convention of States. And, you know, let's look at the timeline. Convention of States was started in 2010. They recruited Mark Meckler into it after he got kicked out of Tea Party because he was a known name in still good with the time with the conservative crowd. Then they got Mark Levin on board.
Yes.
Now, then you saw Glenn Beck. Mm-hmm. And so you see these people who were a staunch conservative known in the conservative community, and they essentially recruited them in, but they did so at a cost to the conservative. So they basically told these people, and Hannity as well, hey, as long as you help us on Convention of States, which is a, you know, a slow death of patriotism, then we'll give you the rights to stay on the air or keep, you know, for example, Glenn Beck has the Blaze. And so they kind of sold out as long as they push Convention of States, which seems like a really good patriot project. But in fact, it's a nefarious agenda, it's Soros-backed money.
That is a wonderful thing for you to reveal to us. I did see the arguments back and forth with Mark Levin when he proposed that, and he is legally very brilliant, but honestly, I mean, if they're not obeying the Constitution now, what are they going to do? Put in something there that says you have to obey the Constitution? That's ridiculous. I would rather leave it alone. I agree with Ryan and yourself. It is a horrible time to do anything to the Constitution. We're best protected, I think, just by leaving it as is. What about yourself, Denise?
I agree.
Yes, and I agree also. We need to abide by what our founders give us, and it's not a faulty document. If we would just simply abide by it, again, a lot of the problems that we are incurring would be solved.
Oh, I very much agree. Ryan, let's get back to you, and what is your position of the Second Amendment? And I do believe, as you mentioned previously, that they do a change to the Constitution and our Second Amendment rights may disappear overnight. I know this is something that the progressives, the communists, want badly.
Yes. You know, without the Second Amendment, we can't guarantee our freedom for any of the rights. And, you know, a grand example of that was 2014, where they attacked our family. And it was because of the Second Amendment, in part, that we were able to survive that. You know, our founding fathers were wise men. And I also believe not only were they wise, but they were following the Spirit of the Lord. And I do believe that the Revolutionary War was won and our Constitution was founded by divine providence, inspiration from our Father in heaven to these men. I do believe that these men were the best men that God could find at that time to bring forth this work to provide for our rights. And in that wisdom and in that work, they stated that we have the right to keep and bear arms. I want to quote it exactly. It says, the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed. Okay, so first of all, that amendment states that a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state. Now, a militia, many people might have a negative connotation of that word. I don't quite understand why they would have such a negative connotation. Militia, by definition, is every able-bodied man. And in these days, that's extended also to women who wish to join. And in the United States Code, it includes every able-bodied man between the ages of 17 and 45. In Nevada, it's extended further to include every able-bodied man between the ages of 17 and 65. And so a militia is all of us that are able and capable of protecting the freedom of our state. And that's not just necessarily the geographical boundaries of a state, but also our state of mind, so to be, or our state of well-being, our state of welfare. Okay, so we have to be in a free state, an ability to exercise our freedom. And this militia is necessary. Now, the right of the people to keep and to bear arms is interconnected with the militia. And again, that militia is not an organized, speaking about militia. The militia, both in the United States Code, U.S. Code, and also in Nevada State Constitution, are defined to be broken up into two categories. One is the organized militia, and second is the unorganized militia. Now, the organized militia consists of the National Guard, the Naval Reserves, and those organized bodies of armament, so to speak. That's the organized militia. The unorganized militia are all those other men ages between 17 and 65 in Nevada that are not members of the organized militia. And so when we talk about militia members, if you're a man between ages of 17 and 45, you're part of the militia, like it or not. Now, if you're trained or not, that's another issue. If you are associated with a group that identifies themselves as militia or not, that's another issue. But if you're between those ages, you are the militia. And we have the right to be well armed for the protection of our freedom. Now, they didn't put that, our founding fathers did not put that in there so that we can have guns to go duck hunting or deer hunting. It has nothing to do with hunting or recreational shooting. It has everything to do with the security of a free state, both individually and collectively. And that Second Amendment is so very important, because if we lost that, then governments could overrun the people, trample their rights into the ground. They're doing a good job at that already.
They are.
But because we have the Second Amendment, and it's specifically for the purpose to secure our freedom against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And when a foreign government, such as the United States government, comes into Nevada and starts to rob and steal, as they did to us in 2014, then it is by that Second Amendment that we are able to secure our freedom.
Yes,
and
that is very well understood by folks like yourselves and myself and others who study the Constitution and ponder consequences to the people. A lot of folks don't understand that overseas other countries have no First Amendment rights. They have no Second Amendment rights. The United Kingdom disarmed its citizenry a long time ago. The results have been horrible. They're struggling. And there are plans to do the same thing to us that have been in the works forever. And like you said, we lose the Second Amendment, we stand to lose everything else. Ryan, your position on immigration?
Well, I believe in strong borders. Now, because an invasion is not immigration, I do believe that there should be easier process for lawful naturalization. I believe that the processes that are taking place now are so stringent and difficult that that's part of the reason some people invade rather than go through the process. But I also believe that we should take down the bird feeder, so to speak. You know, the birds congregate around the bird feeder because there's free feed.
Yeah.
And they don't have to work for it. Now, you know, I know a lot of Mexican people or people from, you know, South America, or not South America, but anyway, from the other countries that have come up here. And, hey, I am friends with lots of them.
Yeah.
And I know that many of the time they come here looking to improve their lives. And that's what, throughout world history, people move around, pioneers. I mean, we settled the West because people were seeking to improve their lives. That's just human nature to move around and try to find a place that they can better live. And obviously, this union of several states must be a better place to live than the states south of the border, Mexico and so forth. And so they're coming here to improve their lives. I understand that. I can respect that. And yet, a country without control of their borders and without some definition to their borders is no country at all. And invasions interrupt the normal process of social life. We're getting a bunch of background noise. Is that on your end, or what's going on?
No, I hear you very clearly.
Okay. Anyway, so I believe in strong borders, but I also believe in recognizing the rights and the needs of those who are trying to come here. I'm concerned about how some of them are being treated while they're here, whether they're illegal or not. These men still have rights. They still have human rights. And I don't like how some of them are being treated, but still the legality of their being here is an issue. There's borders. There's physical borders, such as the border down in south of the between Mexico and America, and there's also documentation borders. In other words, the path to citizenship through documentation. And so I believe that the physical border needs to be secured, and I believe that the documentation border needs to be reconstructed, so to speak.
Well, I do agree with you, and I do like that you use the word invasion, because that is what really is going on. If one were to look at a dictionary definition of invasion, one would understand why people like myself use the word invasion when we're talking about those who come over the border illegally. If you look at California, California has been lost, I believe, to the federal government. It has gone its own way. Much of what is fueling the voting in that state are the sons and daughters of those who came here illegally. They are referred to as anchor babies for many different reasons. Some of them have gone into politics. You have people like Javier Becerra, who's the attorney general. He's now making laws for that state. And it's ridiculous for people not to understand that these kids who were born here and who were granted citizenship status, much against what the 14th Amendment, which is misinterpreted, that was for the children of blacks way a long time ago. This is a scam, and they are voting. Illegal aliens in California are voting. They are given driver's licenses. There's more than 1 million of them, and of course, there's a motor voter ID law. They are voting us out of our own country. The federal government has not defended the people of the United States against this invasion. And again, I say that it is an invasion. The Posse Comitatus Act forbids the military from having any law enforcement functions when it comes to what's happening on the southern border with Mexico. But that's only because this has not been reclassified for what it is, a total invasion of the United States. Ryan, I look at the state of Nevada, and I go to Las Vegas frequently, and it's a mess. You got more illegal aliens taking jobs that Americans could use. I see Americans living on the streets, underneath bridges, on sidewalks. This is unbelievable. What can you tell us from your particular point of view? Immigration is supposed to be the purview of the federal government, but I would say that even under President Donald Trump, it refuses to do a proper job. What do you say about that?
Well, there's obviously an undeclared war on the people by this invasion. And, Denise here wants to comment on that.
Yeah, please do. Denise, come on in.
You know, before we went on the air, we were talking about this a little bit, and I can say that Nevada has its own complicit shadow government in the form of administrative agency, and that would be our union. As you know or may have heard, 3 weeks ago for the Mexican election, California was declared the swing state, believe it or not.
Wow.
For the Mexican elections, yes. So let's go to our unions. Our unions have full-time employees that do nothing but create documentation. And on this phantom documentation, these people come in and get driver's license. We have the motor voter ID lots here as well. What is so scary is that Mike Roberson, who's running for lieutenant governor, who has been the hand-picked right hand to Adam Laxalt, who's running for governor, put into play an ID law here that is giving driver's license to non-resident non-citizens. then they can use this driver's license number, which has no particular serial stratification to it, to then sign up to be voting members of Nevada. So you see, they kind of come in an illegal fashion by breaking that documentation border, but then they're essentially legalized through what a Republican, Mike Roberson, did, and Adam Laxalt's going along with it, because this was Roberson's claim to fame, was the giving the driver's license to people. Now, could they have selected, I'll call it a, a non-standardized driver's license? Because their argument behind it was, well, you don't want the person to not have ID if they cause an accident. Well, yes, that we all agree. However, if I'm a resident, can I have a blue driver's license? And if they're a non-resident, can they have a red one or a black one or whatever? And so we could have done this at that level, but it was never implemented. And they have essentially used the non-awareness of Nevada residents to kind of slip this in. Now we have we have hundreds of thousands of these licenses out there. Now, how many are eligible to vote? We don't know. I don't know the breakdown, but I know that it's a huge number.
They vote fraudulently anyways. That's just a fact. That's what happens. I remember seeing a video where Barack Obama, a couple of years ago, explained to an illegal alien that, hey, nobody checks up on it. That's up to you if you vote or not. And it is disgusting. Ryan, I know you study the Constitution assiduously, and I'm sure that you do also. Denise, I'd like to get input from both of you. The federal government is unwilling to do a proper job and protect the people. What can the people do constitutionally when the federal government refuses to perform on its duty to protect people against an invasion? Because that is what it is. The politicians like to say that we have 11 or 12 million. They've been saying that for years now. The real numbers are 20 million and up. So what do you guys say about this? When the federal government refuses to protect the people from an invasion constitutionally, what happens next? Either one of you have an answer.
Well, I would like to comment. You kind of touched on it already, but government has no authority in and of itself. It only has what we the people delegate to it. The authority to do everything belongs to the people here, and we can only delegate that which we have and nothing more. Now, with a delegation of power does not mean that we relinquish that authority from ourselves. And so if we have delegated the federal government the authority to protect our borders and they fail to do so, then that falls back upon ourselves to do. I could give some examples, and maybe I don't need to. But how to go about that's another question. That's one of the reasons we delegated that to the federal government, is because it's difficult for an individual to carry such thing out. But on a state level, we still have that authority. And so I'm going to have to study that out and find out exactly, what should be done and what the people of Nevada want to have done.
I do have one idea on that.
Sure,
so
go ahead.
I would say that, I'm in a number of conservative voting, advocacy groups. So I guess everybody, pick your favorite one you want to activate with and put this challenge to them. Find your attorney general candidate for your state and put together a pledge. Ask them to pledge that they will establish grand juries and common law court, Article 3 court. You'll know right then if their eyes light up and they say that these things are positive, then you'll know you have a good candidate. If they run out of the room, you'll know that they're just another side of the coin of control, espousing party politics and what we want to hear to get in office to just do us more harm. So I would say activate, get a pledge together. Maybe there's already a pledge out here for this, I don't know. But there's tons and tons of activating women, activating men, young Republican clubs. These are a very legitimate question that could be posed to any attorney general running for the state office and see what they say. And also get trained up on Article III court and grand jury, because these are the methods that we as citizens can hold our oath takers accountable by.
Well, great. I do want to mention that I had attended an event in Cashman Center, Nevada, quite a number of years ago, at which Steve King, a representative from Iowa, spoke, and he said to us that 25 Americans are killed daily by illegal aliens, some through outright intent, some through accidents. The mathematics on that is astounding. If you multiply 25 times 365, you come up with more than 9,000. If that number is unbelievable, just cut it in half and you got like 4,500. Keep slicing. And what the federal government has on its hands is a holocaust of their own creation that is covered up by the media. Rapes, it's through the roof. People are being ruined. They're losing their jobs to people who have come from south of the border in search for a better life, but they have destroyed our quality of life. California looks, many parts of it, as if it were third world Mexico. The federal government has allowed these people to take a wrecking ball to the United States of America. All of our elected officials are part of this. If there were anybody that really cared, you would see everything change overnight. But the fact that it does not, that there's such squabbling about whether we can employ the military on the border and such, speaks to the fact that they are for this mayhem, this chaos, because in one way or another, they're getting paid off, which makes them all traitors. That is what we are dealing with. And people better get used to it, because we are losing these United States of America. I see it as a fractured entity. I'm sure Denise and yourself, Mr. Bundy, you see it also. The question is whether we will go into civil war or survive what is happening to us. I do not want to succumb to communism and to further control by the federal government. Ryan, you first. What do you say about this?
Well, I'm definitely not a communist, nor am I a socialist. And I will oppose, you know, socialist programs, the socialist ideals, communistic ideals, I definitely will not allow that to happen. And yet, you know, I see a lot of those things coming upon us, and I don't see that the Mexicans or, you know, immigrants are the cause of that. You know, I often say that, you know, we send our military out around the world and we're trying to police the world. And they say that they're going to, you know, serve our country and protect our freedoms. Well, our freedoms are not being lost overseas. They're being lost right here at home, right in our backyard. In fact, right in our front yard, right in front of our face, our freedoms are being lost. And, you know, I don't think that immigration is necessarily the main cause of that. I think that these progressive communistic ideals are the cause of that. I think that there's a disease in America that I call it the get something for nothing disease, that people are wanting to receive things for which they haven't earned.
Yes.
They want handouts from anywhere, from government most particularly these days, and that's what socialism and communism ends up doing. Is they promise, you know, free this or free that, they're always, you know, the people are always trying to shift the responsibility elsewhere than themselves, and this is a terrible. I call it a disease. It's definitely a problem.
I'd love to build on that, Ryan. You know, we have what I call a savior culture. If you're a churchgoer and you go to a church, they say that, well, you can be saved by this person, that person. It's entitlements are a savior culture. Our medical industry is a savior culture. We have usurped our own rights to our own responsibilities and therefore rewards by giving our own savings to somebody else. And when that will stop, I don't know. But I think that these are personal epiphanies that everybody has to kind of come to their own conclusion on. And, you know, if you don't know what the Tree of Liberty looks like, you'll never recognize your rights. And I've heard Brian say, on government and spending, tighter than bark on trees. And I love it, tighter than bark on trees, government and spending. If you have, you know, loose bark to a tree, the tree dies. It's got no protection. And if you don't get taught in school or at the kitchen table what liberty looks like in form of the Constitution, you can't defend your right, you can't claim it, you can't use it. And when you can't claim, use, and defend your right, you have no right at all. And the whole premise of Ryan's run here is to get people to understand their claim, use, and defend rights, and that's the basis for our principles over politics, and that's what makes him a statesman versus a politician.
Absolutely. Well put. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, you know, we moved in what Denise was talking about, you know, from socialist communist ideals to our rights, which are what America is built upon. But, you know, back to the socialist and communist idea and the get something for nothing idea, you know, it's, again, that disease is laziness. That disease is...
Or ignorance.
You know, well, and ignorance is definitely plays into that. But it's the whole lottery idea that, okay, I'm going to put forth, you know, $5 and I'm going to win $5 million type of program.
Mm-hmm.
And I placed my hope and my, you know, faith in all that, you know, or I'm going to go to Vegas and I'm going to hit the jackpot and become wealthy, or I'm going to, or I'm going to get somebody else to pay for my medical bills through Medicaid or Medicare, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put the responsibility for my retirement on someone else, such as Social Security. And I expect my, you know, my government to take care of me and all my needs because I don't want to take care of myself. I don't want to be responsible for my own earnings, my own income. So I'm going to go get on welfare. And, you know, those are terrible things. You know, I can see that we as society need maybe a few safety nets, but they shouldn't become the norm. And when we expect those things to become, you know, just to be there, these entitlements, that's destructive to the soul, destructive to our way of life, and it moves into the socialist and communist programs. And those things aren't just made and given out of thin air. Where one receives without earning, another must earn without receiving. And therein lies the problem, is because now we make slaves out of those who are earning, and then their earnings are taken away from them to give to someone else who didn't earn.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. So, folks, we're coming to the end of our interview. I would like to have some closing words and anything that has not been addressed. First, we'll go with Denise. Ryan, that'll give you a little bit of time to think. Ryan, you are running against a corrupt machine, the Republican Party, the Democrat Party. It's not there for the American people. Anybody that looks at it would understand that. Unfortunately, that is what we have. That's what we're dealing with, and you're running as an independent. Denise, closing thoughts, please.
You know, I've been a GOPer for 36 years myself, and I even worked on the Ross Perot campaign back in the day. I think it's been a long road for me to discover that the left and the right are two sides of a coin of control. And as long as we stick to that, we're going to lose our constitutionality. It's only when we can step outside that with independent thinking and question why the Constitution itself is not the premise of the platform of those parties. Because the fact of the matter is, if it was, we could cut through a lot of this very quickly, because then the people of the party would be following the Constitution. They're not. So let's enforce the Constitution, but you have to start at your own kitchen table. and that is teaching your children the Constitution, learning about it yourself, learning about your rights, and start claiming, using, and defending your rights in a small way, in a big way. And pretty soon, once you make that leap to freedom, you'll very soon start to say, don't tell me how to freedom. And that's where we want everyone to be. But until then, small steps.
Okay, and we do have a caller that wants to interact with you folks, so here we go. Hello, caller. Name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, this is Joe Santos in Texas.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to congratulate Ryan for his run for governor. We need more patriots in our country. And we start by running for office and eliminating the threat on our country through the Democrats and Republicans. They are no longer our patriots, but most are our enemy in towards a world of globalism. But I agree with your concept on the immigration. You know, we do need to stop that and have better standards of how they come into this country. And most of what you're looking at, it does reflect on our entire country, but our borders, what you're looking at in Texas, our governor uses the National Guard to patrol the borders, and as well as the Border Patrol, which is a federal agency. But the governor here in Texas has a lot of influence on patrolling the borders, and I myself have been along the border to monitor what goes on, and we do have terrorists. Camps down around El Paso in the most remote parts of our state, and it's getting worse. And going down through South Texas, it starts to infiltrate in from the cartels up into Texas, and it has now become even 100 miles in from the border is getting worse. And I suspect that it's getting like that back towards Nevada and California. If California is bad, the Nevada border will have to be patrolled by the Nevada governor, and your ideas reflect of what we need to be looking at for border safety. California is no longer a safe border between us and the southern countries, but I appreciate your stand on how to make our country better, and I believe that you are right. Our country has never, it started out as people objecting to each other with the Democrats and Republicans, and it has become that neither party now reflects on the people's rights. And running for office, we need to look at it that we are American patriots and should not reflect on party systems. We need to get our country back. We need to change our education system where our kids are being schooled to become puppets and without thinking, give their rights to someone else to be led by someone else. You know, we're no longer teaching about jobs and creating financial security for ourselves. They are being taught that someone else can take care of them. That's not right. You know, we need our country back. We need our country's culturalism back. And I very much appreciate what you're doing for our country. We need more people
well,
like
thank you,
you. To lead.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So thank you. Appreciate it. So, yes, you know, we have reached out to Governor Abbott there in Texas, and we are supporting Trump's decision to put National Guard on the border. You know, my first and foremost belief is that the president is the commander in chief of the regular army and navies, and they should go down there. That is a federal responsibility. The president does not have the authority to call up National Guard. That's an authority that is given to Congress, but when Congress calls up the National Guard, then the president is the commander-in-chief of that part of the National Guard, or that part of the militia is how it's called in the Constitution, when mm-hmm. they are in the actual service of the United States. But, you know, we in here in Nevada do recognize the necessity of that strong border and would send our organized militia if need be, to protect. You know, Nevada doesn't have any exterior border to Mexico, and so we could only aid and assist those states who do have that border, such as, you know, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. We have reached out and spoken with Governor Abbott about that.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, I believe in our situation right now, what we're looking at is California is just totally disrupted.
Yes.
And the illegal immigrants are now coming in through Nevada, and they're invading our country.
They are.
And it will have to come to the point that those states that border California will have to take a stand as if that was a Mexican border and stop the invasion of these people coming
Absolutely.
Into our country, because we have terrorists coming in. I have been down to the border and I have seen busloads, tourist buses coming in, immigrating Chinese tourists. But in fact, they were caught down around El Paso, and they were coming in with fake passports. And I have been down to El Paso whenever Iraqis were caught, kind of be smuggled across the border. And there's a lot of that coming in. It's not only Mexicans. They look like Mexicans, but they're not Mexicans.
No, they're Middle Easterners. They're... Your name is Pete, right?
No, Joe Sanchez.
Joe Sanchez. Joe, I'm sorry, I got your name wrong. You know, I've been out to the borders many a time myself, armed, because there was the need for that. In Arizona,
exactly.
There are portions that have signs on them close to the borders warning the American citizens not to go in that area because they may be harmed. And when I was stopped for speeding in Arizona quite a number of years ago, I was near Douglas, Arizona. I inquired of the highway patrol officer about that location. He said, don't go down there. The drug cartel people have weapons that are much heavier than mine. I don't go down there. I can't defend myself. You won't be able to defend yourself either. Now, somebody please tell me that this is not an invasion, because it is. And it requires regular military to clean out what there is on that border. Drug cartel members have purchased land adjacent to the border. They are Mexican. They run that area. They have spotters on our hills here within the United States so they can get their drug loads through. I've spoken with sheriffs in Texas. They have been out to Congress years ago saying that they don't have the firepower to deal with this. Somebody tell me that this is somehow not an invasion that necessitates the full use of our military to clean out those sniper nests that they have put up here, the Mexican military that comes over regularly and mounts 50 caliber machine guns to hold off our sheriffs and such, and that has happened. That is very documented. Mexican aircraft, helicopters that have landed on our side. It's a mess out there, and to be playing that posse comitatus prohibits our regular military from being there and functioning is insane. I would send the Marines out there to take everything back before I hand it back to the Border Patrol.
Exactly. I've been down on the border. There's a little town just south of El Paso, and Sierra Blanca. It's right on the interstate I-10.
Yeah.
But there's a little town down about 10 miles, and I've been there. I asked people to go with me, Border Patrol, Texas Rangers. Nobody wanted to go with me down there, and I did take my weapon, but they told me, just like you said, and those people down in that little town have got weapons more powerful than what law enforcement has here in Texas. And I went down because I wanted to get pictures of what was down there in that little town. And when I finally arrived, it was 10 miles, and the deputy waited for me on the interstate and told me he wouldn't go down there with me. But I went down and took pictures. There's no electricity down there, nothing. You can't even get cell phone service. You can't get any kind of radio communication because it's so remote down into the Colorado, into the river basin. And you start going down there, you're off into another world. It's everything's kerosene lanterns in that little town, but it's a terrorist camp. And why people don't come in, and this, when I went down there, it was during the time of Obama. And we monitored buses of people coming into this country at night, and it was with Obama's blessing. You know, those kind of things, our government has been corrupted by the Democrats and by the Republicans. You know, they want globalism in our country. We Americans don't want that. But as Americans, we have to tell our public officials that we need to put a stop to the terrorist activity in this country. Here in Texas, that's not the only terrorist camp we have. We have another camp down by Houston, and we've been down there and monitored that location, and people get shot at around that location. But the problem is, the people living in that camp are working in the law enforcement in the local community. They've become to where, I don't know whether it's money. Hillary Clinton in her election went to Houston to get money from the Muslims. These are Muslims living in our country,
yes,
and working in these terrorist camps and then working in the community and having the support of the community. But when you go around checking on them, you will get shot, and there's nobody moving to stop them.
Not.
We need to put force on our public officials to put a stop to these camps. And they're in Colorado. Right now we have in Texas what's called the Austin Red Guards. That's a radical communist group working with the in East Austin. They have, and that's our state capital, there's a training camp for the radical Democrats. They communicated with the Red Guards, which is a communist group. They're also working with a Colorado group of Muslims, radical Muslims, and they terrorize our state through these demonstrations and demonstrations in other parts of the country. But yet, because of our constitutional rights, they let them go because of freedom of speech. It gets to the point where that freedom of speech is actually anti-American, and it's a threat on our democracy.
That's what we're looking at. Indeed, yep. Mr. Sanchez, I want to thank you for the call. I've got to close out what we have going for program, but your words have been very well received, sir. You've expressed very intelligently the situation that we actually have in the United States. And believe me, I bristle when I hear of it because I have been a border activist. I was an original Minuteman when that group got together on the Arizona border. I've seen what's happening. I am myself Hispanic, and Spanish is my first language. This is an invasion, and unfortunately, our government is complicit. How the people are going to resolve this, I don't know. Any closing words, Mr. Sanchez?
Just a big thank you to Mr. Ron Bundy for running for governor of Nevada. We need more people like him. We need to take our country back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. Wow, what an intelligent call. Ryan, you've heard a lot. Closing words, sir.
Yes, you know, kind of like a map. If you don't know where you are, you don't know how to get to where you're wanting to go. And so, you know, I encourage people to read and understand the Constitution because it gives us the place where we're supposed to be. And then we can see where we're at and see the distance between and how to close that gap. If you don't understand the form of government for which we are, if you don't understand what's supposed to be, you can't recognize the wrongs that are going on. If you don't understand what is constitutional and what is unconstitutional, then you won't be able to recognize when there's unconstitutional things going on. And so I know that the people are studying and reading the Constitution more than they were before, but I encourage people to continue to be able to refer to the Constitution, to each article, and understand what that article pertains to and how and what it's supposed to be. Our founding fathers and those who fought in the Revolutionary War gave their lives and their blood. They sacrificed their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to bring us this freedom, to establish this document, and let's honor them, and let's preserve our freedom by understanding what they gave us and recognize where the wrongs are and return to what is right.
Well, Ryan, thank you very much for providing a choice for the people. I want to bring Denise on. Denise, what is the website so people can contribute? Money is a necessity in order to run in politics. And I would urge people to give generously if they believe in Mr. Bundy's message, and I do.
Well, freedom isn't free, as you know. And if Mr. Bundy could run on his own finances, because he is fiscally sovereign in every way, he would. But the fact of the matter is that a governor's race needs $5 million, and we're looking to launch ours. We're into it over a year now on all the other campaigns except for ours. Because Mr. Bundy was compelled to run, and as a statesman, he will win. We're winning hearts everywhere we already have. So if you go to electbattlebornbundy.com, you'll find donation buttons on every page. Also, tell your friends, because the freedoms of fire are everywhere, but we need to spread them minutely, daily, hourly. We cannot stop. And if you want to text to donate, text Bundy to 53445, even a $10 donation. But please encourage your friends, get on our Facebook, share our articles, and look to what Ryan's talking about on his Facebook, because that's what other conservative governors should be discussing on theirs. And also get after your AG representatives. See if they have that sparkle in their eye when you ask them about grand jury and Article 3 court. And then you'll know right away what their true intentions are.
Absolutely. I want to thank you, Denise, and also yourself, Mr. Ryan Bundy. I want to wish you the best in your run for governor of Nevada. And also, I want to thank Mr. Sanchez, an American through and through. You can tell that patriotism burns through this man as it does through the two of you. Anyways, folks, thank you so much, and good luck on everything. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. This is Frank George, your conductor, your host on All Aboard the Night Train. You'll find us on Facebook. Simply look for All Aboard the Night Train. And also on the web, on our own website, thenighttrainshow.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to hear from you. Take care now. Bye-bye.